You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It remains to be seen if the Rockets ultimately have the talent and or execution to become NBA champions. But after Saturday night's Game 3 in Salt Lake City, Utah, one thing is becoming more and more clear. They definitely have the heart. With that, welcome in to another happy postgame episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Sunday morning, happy Easter, by the way. The Rockets are victorious yet again, 104-101 on Saturday night in Utah. That gives them a commanding 3-0 lead in the best-of-seven series. No NBA team has ever lost a 3-0 lead in a best-of-seven. And for the Rockets, they've actually yet to sweep a 7-game playoff series since the 1995 NBA Finals against Orlando, appropriately their most recent NBA championship. So Game 4 is Monday evening in Utah, and the Rockets have a great opportunity then to not only end the series, but also give themselves close to a week of rest before the series Rockets-Warriors most likely in Round 2 seems likely to start sometime between Sunday and Tuesday early next week. And if the Rockets can go out and take care of business, it won't be easy. The Jazz do not fit the mold of a team that even down 0-3 is going to fold, led by Donovan Mitchell, who had 34 in Game 3. Those guys are going to keep coming, and they're still trying to build because it's a relatively young team. Quinn Snyder, it's a stable coaching staff, so they don't fit the profile of a team that because they're down 0-3 is going to mail it in. It won't come easy. But if the Rockets can get it done in Game 4 and get that week of rest, it's big. Not just from the standpoint of advancing through round one of the NBA playoffs, but also how it sets you up down the line. Because it wasn't just about James Harden on Saturday night in Utah. Now, yes, he had 22 points, 10 assists. But the story for James, who shot just 3 of 20, was one of perseverance. He started 0 of 15, and fortunately, he made 3 of his next 4, including a couple of huge threes in the fourth quarter. So I thought that relative to other games in the career of James Harden on that type of stage, I was proud of him for continuing to fight. Mentioned the 10 assists. Even when the shot wasn't falling, he got his teammates involved. He also had 6 steals, 4 rebounds, so he stayed engaged on the other end. Houston defensively, their collective effort was fantastic, I thought. Limited Utah to just 46 points in the second half of that game. Donovan Mitchell, even though he scored 34, he had 13 of the 34 in the first 9 minutes of the game when he shot 5 of 6. He ended up shooting 9 of 27, which tells you that he made just 4 of his next 21 shots. So everyone up and down the roster, not just the usual suspects. Eric Gordon has played great defense on Mitchell throughout the series for the most part. He also had a huge 3 in the fourth quarter of Saturday's Game 3, the 104-101 victory. We'll give him his due. Of course, Austin Rivers, Daniel House Jr., even Gerald Green at times, P.J. Tucker, who had 12 and 10, including a couple of massive rebounds in the final 15 seconds to help the Rockets close it out at the free throw line. P.J. made 3 of his 4 foul shots to ice the game. There were lots of contributions up and down the Rockets roster defensively, a lot of grit, a lot of heart, but some of it goes back to the leadership. And James Harden, even when the shot isn't falling, to have 6 steals, to have those rebounds, to stay engaged, even with 5 fouls, which both James Harden and Chris Paul had, CP3 ended up with 18 points on 7 of 15 shooting, that strikes the right chord, it sets the right tone, and it keeps everyone engaged up and down the roster to where even if the team is struggling, had so many things go against them, they were down 6 midway through the third quarter for the game, Utah went to the foul line 38 times. Collectively, the teams between them 72. It was a very choppy game. It was weird. There were definitely stretches where the Jazz at home got a benefit of the doubt, officiating-wise, that they shouldn't have gotten and certainly did not get in Houston. And yet the Rockets, led by James Harden, led by Chris Paul, persevered through all of it and got the victory that should all but ice the series, because if Utah were to win, it would have been 2-1, and they would have been playing for a tie in Monday's Game 4. Instead, they're facing a 3-0 deficit that, as mentioned, no team in NBA history in the postseason has ever recovered from. Now, I'll be joined in a few moments by my friend Karthik Prasad, who you know on Twitter as @StanfordKP. He's a regular guest here at Locked On Rockets, and he's really good at contextualizing. So in the narrative of James Harden's career and, of course, the Harden era of Rockets, we're going to be talking a lot about what flipping a game like this means. Here off the top, though, before we get to Karthik, I want to make sure that we give due to guys other than James Harden. I mentioned a few of them in passing in the last couple of minutes, because this is a strange game. Well, everything about it was strange, but in terms of what it means, the guys who were most responsible for the win, they may not be the most responsible for ultimately bringing you a title. That goes back to James Harden. And so to see James overcome an 0-15 start to end up with 14 points in the fourth quarter, 50% shooting from the field, 40% from three, it's really nice and rare to see an NBA superstar that can turn a game on its head right in the middle of it without having to have a couple of days off to clear his head. I thought that was really encouraging from a psychological standpoint to see James, the maturity, now a 29-year-old James Harden, do something that I don't think a 25, 26-year-old, who knows, maybe not even a 27-year-old, it was just 2 years ago when we all know what happened Game 6 against the Spurs, would have been capable of doing. So in the grand scheme, I think that's very important. However, from a micro-level analysis perspective, the guys who really delivered on Saturday night were those who kept the Rockets afloat through the first three quarters when Harden had yet to even see a single field goal go through the rim, and yet the Rockets were still within striking distance, within a couple of possessions at the worst the entire time. Chris Paul, I mentioned his 18 points, 4 assists, 3 steals, so predictably he had a big defensive impact as well. But offensively, Chris this series has shot just 3 of 16 from three-point land, yet he still had an enormous impact. And I think it speaks to, of course, there's all this time in between games, so he's more fresh, a 33-year-old, year 14 Chris Paul. That's always a big deal. Beyond that, though, they seem to have managed his minutes so well down the stretch of the year, because for a large stretch of the regular season, what concerned me, there were games that Chris was hot from three, including the finale in Oklahoma City. But when the threes weren't falling, he didn't always have the turbo button, the ability to start and stop on a dime, to get out in transition. And of his 18 points, so many were at key inflection points. There was a period with about 5 minutes left in the fourth. The Rockets had just a one-point lead. They were up 6 a couple of minutes before that. The gym, everything was just rolling against them. It was so loud. The Jazz were switching everything beautifully. They defended every action perfectly. And Chris Paul took it to the bucket and froze the defender with just a look, and ended up getting, because of that freeze, a three-footer that he put in, and that put the Rockets back up 3. That's just one possession, but first off, it came at a key inflection point. And secondly, I think it's reflective of what he didn't always show during the regular season, which is his ability to take over a game even if the threes aren't falling. And that's what you really shouldn't worry about. Chris Paul's 3 of 16 from 3 in this series, those are eventually going to fall. That's the one thing that's not going to get washed, per se. What you worry about is the starting and stopping ability, the quick twitch. And that's what he has shown us against the Utah Jazz, that over the regular season, perhaps it's not that he didn't have it in him. Perhaps it's that Chris and the Rockets were trying to manage him so that he could be in his best form come playoff time. And through three games, even though the three-point shot isn't falling, he has been that level of an impact player. And even though I believe that was his final points of the game, it wasn't like he had the dagger shots such as James Harden. He answered a Donovan Mitchell 3 with about a minute 10 left. The Jazz were then 1. The Harden 3 put Houston back up 4. Eric Gordon had a big 3, as I mentioned earlier, to put Houston up by 4 points. That was with about 2.5 minutes to go, I believe. PJ Tucker had 2 huge rebounds down the stretch and made 3 of his 4 free throws. PJ a double-double, 12 and 10. All of those things were key. And so Chris Paul, if you look at the final 4 or 5 minutes, he didn't have the key bucket that you say, wow, this was what turned the game or iced the game. At the same time, when the Rockets really needed someone to step up, and that was the first 40 minutes of the game when James Harden had yet to even make a shot, his first field goal was on a dunk with 7:33 left, That's what Chris Paul did. Playoff CP3 kept them afloat. And that's key because, yes, we're going to talk a lot about the evolution, the maturity, the growth of James Harden, the rest of the Rockets. But Chris Paul, he played a key role in giving the Rockets a chance to be within contact, within striking distance down the stretch before James Harden could finally get going with, as mentioned, the 14 points that he delivered in the fourth quarter of that game. We also shouldn't forget off the bench, Austin Rivers, 11 points, 4 of 6 overall, 2 of 3 from behind the three-point arc. Gerald Green, 9 points, 3 of 5 from 3. This is why you trust those guys to keep shooting. No matter the environment, in this case, on the road, Salt Lake City, that is as noisy, as challenging of an arena as you will find in the NBA. And boy, did they answer in a big way. Every challenge, that was a big part early in the second, early in the fourth quarters of how the Rockets, even with a first and third quarter that did not go anywhere near expectations, in large part because Harden had yet to make a single shot, the Rockets stayed within striking distance, and then they made a lot of headway with those bench units, in large part because Austin Rivers, Gerald Green, they kept shooting. Austin Rivers, if he's found his three-point stroke, that's a heck of a development. I've said that throughout the year. Last 2 years, this is the guy who shot nearly 38% from three. This year, he's been in the low 30s. If he goes back to the form, the level of shooter he was the last couple of years while retaining his defense for the guys like Steph Curry, potentially Damian Lillard or Russell Westbrook, if Houston's fortunate enough to get beyond the second round, if you combine that level of defense with making threes, that's a big deal. And Gerald Green, a lot of us wondered, why is this guy playing ahead of Iman Shumpert for a team that needs more defense? Well, number one, even without Shumpert and with Green playing, the Rockets are getting a good defensive effort. Beyond that, though, his ability, especially on the road, to not be fazed by the environment, but also just the mechanics, his quick release, the ability, even in traffic, we saw it with the 5 threes in the regular season finale at Oklahoma City. You could see it in his 3 three-pointers on Saturday in Utah. Gerald's ability, it's not just the mentality to keep shooting, that's part of it, but also just the physical execution, how quick his release is against an elite defense that's dialed in, the ability to make tough shots to get it off that quickly and just put the ball in the bucket. That's a step up from Iman Shumpert, and ultimately, that's why, at least in this matchup, the Rockets and Mike D'Antoni decided that Gerald was the play. Will that continue against Golden State? We'll have to wait and see. And of course, both sides, the Rockets, the Warriors, they still have work to do to close out those series. At this point, though, it seems to be inevitable. Next round is the showdown that we've been waiting nearly a year for, and it's up to the Rockets to see if they can step up and take advantage. A lot of it is going to fall on the shoulders of one James Harden. So that's what I'm going to spend a lot of this podcast, what's left of it, talking about. I understand that at the end of the day, what you face against Utah is not what you're going to face against Golden State. So in terms of the X's and O's, the mechanics of how Houston got this game, I'm not sure the particulars are all that relevant in terms of predictive value when you play the Warriors or anyone else. So that's why we're going to turn our attention back to some of the more broader themes, the perseverance, the grit, the tenacity, James Harden doing what even 2 years ago, I'm not sure he would do on this stage, in the playoffs, on the road. All of those things in the grand scheme are probably the most important. But in terms of Saturday night's Game 3, we shouldn't forget about the supporting cast. Chris Paul with 18, Austin Rivers with 11, Gerald Green with 9, Eric Gordon with 12, including the big three, PJ Tucker a double-double with a couple of huge boards and 3 made free throws in the final 12 seconds. If you wonder how the Rockets, with James Harden going 3 of 20 on the road in the playoffs against a 50-win playoff team in the West, got a win, it's because the help stepped up. The role players were there. So I want to make sure that we give them their due. And while we don't need, if you're the Rockets, that level of execution every single night, because hopefully James Harden's going to shoot better than 3 of 20. Hopefully there's not going to be 38 free throws for your opponent. There were lots of fluky little things that happened in this game. At the same time, if you, number one, get even a fraction of that level of production, then you're going to be in a really good space. And beyond that, it's just nice to know that those guys have that gear in them, that even if James Harden is not at his best, he does have the help that can step up. This is not the one-man band that it felt like at times over James Harden's certainly Houston career and definitely in the first couple of months of this season and during the injuries in December and January. The Rockets, they do have a more complete roster now thanks to the hard work and rebuilding on the fly from Daryl Morey. And in a game in which Harden started 0-15 and shot just 3 of 20 overall. I thought that was on full display in Saturday night's big 104-101 win, which gives the Rockets a commanding 3-0 lead in the best of 7 round 1 series. Game 4, the potential closeout game for the Rockets, also in Salt Lake City, Utah, takes place tomorrow night. That's Monday. And with the win, the Rockets can secure their first sweep of a best of 7 postseason series since the 1995 NBA Finals against the Orlando Magic, which appropriately was their last NBA championship. How sweet it is, and in the case of this season, how sweet it still could be. And remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya Podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. All right, now joining us as we resume our usual 3 points recap, this time of the 104-101 victory by the Rockets in Game 3 Saturday night in Utah, is my friend Karthik Prasad. We've had him on the show before, and if you want to engage with him beyond just this podcast, you can follow him on Twitter at StanfordKP. Karthik, how are you? Happy Easter.
Good. You as well, Ben. I'm excited and happy about last night's win, so just pumped to talk about it.
I think you already know which way I'm leaning from Twitter, but I'll start you with a very broad question. Are you more or less encouraged in the grand scheme by what you saw last night? It's a funky question because Harden shot 3 of 20. There were some tactical adjustments from Quinn Snyder that seemed to throw the Rockets for a loop. And yet, when you consider that they got the win in spite of all of that in a very hostile environment, there's definitely a case that this wasn't just a typical close win in the playoffs. It perhaps was a little bit closer to that it should have been, since Houston up 3-0 is the better team. You can definitely mount a case that this is a really encouraging long-term win. Where do you fall on that scale?
Yeah, no, I'm encouraged, and it's on two fronts. One is for James Harden and his mental toughness and his ability to push through a bad shooting night and have a huge impact on the game outside of shooting. And then second, for the Rockets, I think what was evident to me last night was the fact that this is year two of everyone playing together, and you can kind of see the cohesion and that strength. And then year three of everyone else who'd been there before, Chris and PJ, just knowing Mike's system, and they just had a solid foundation to fall back on. And when James couldn't get it going early, they just kept producing, kept battling, kept defending. And so the continuity from the team was encouraging, and then James, taking over in the fourth quarter was something that I wanted to see and that he came through on.
Where do you fall on the standpoint of the adjustments that Quinn Snyder made and how much predictive value you take? Because my response, I've seen some saying, well, you know, the Warriors are going to be tougher, and throughout this series, the Jazz have gotten some looks from three. They were a little bit better at home, but still below 30%. I think about 12 of 41 overall, so 29% from three. So defensively, we've seen that talk. They're getting too many open threes. Offensively, obviously Harden needs to shoot better than 3 of 20. But the way I look at it, comparing playing the Jazz to playing the Warriors, it's apples and oranges. I just don't see X's and O's. The way you defend Utah, the way you attack them with Rudy Gobert, it's different than with a Warriors team that obviously is much more loaded on the perimeter, but inside they've got Kevon Looney and Andrew Bogut. So to me, you know, certainly the Rockets still need to get one more win in this series, and from that standpoint, the X's and O's, the mechanics are pretty important. But in the grand scheme of the playoffs, I don't really see what the Jazz do from an X's and O's standpoint or what the Rockets do in response as all that indicative of what's going to happen against the Warriors. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I mean, I think the main difference is personnel, and it's less about the talent level, right? We all know that Golden State is one of the most talented teams of all time. I think it's also just the types of personnel that they have, and they're on offense. They run so many screens, so much motion, that it really tests your switching scheme, whereas the Jazz really, they don't. I mean, it's a pretty simplistic offensive system that they run. And then on defense, I think Gobert, he has issues kind of tracking hard on the perimeter. And yesterday I thought he did a better job of shutting down the floater game. But, you know, Golden State will be able to switch more on the perimeter. They'll be able to move with Harden, and that's just going to bring in a new set of challenges, and they just are have longer defenders. And so I think the adjustments were good. I mean, really, the main adjustment was Utah playing with a lot more intensity and physicality. I mean, I don't think they did anything super different, you know, in these first three games. They maybe play James a little more straight up, but the reason they were competitive last night was more an energy, intensity, and passion adjustment than it was any X's and O's from what I could really tell in terms of impacting the game. And so I think it, you know, the Golden State series will be far more mentally challenging, I think, for Houston. They'll have to just, they can't make some of the mistakes they have, and they'll have to be a lot more locked in on both ends. And so we'll see. But I think this has been a good test on how to respond to that level of intensity. And they took every punch last night and then delivered the final knockout.
Yeah, the only adjustment that I could see, they brought Gobert out even further, as you mentioned, to try and deny that floater game. Because Ricky Rubio, whoever Royce O'Neal was picking apart of the perimeter, they were still shading him right. At times down the stretch, Rubio was still literally behind him. The only adjustment I could see, Gobert, who had seven blocks, he came out even further. Clint Capela had a double-double, but even with Gobert coming out further, the fact is he's 7'2", so because of that, the lob game isn't there. And fortunately, the Warriors don't have a guy of that length inside. The downside, of course, they have probably the most talented perimeter cast of players that the NBA has ever seen. But that's why, X's and O's wise, it's just apples to oranges what you're going to need to do against Golden State and what you need to do against Utah. This series, as I see it, is just survive in advance by any means necessary. And I said in the third quarter when Harden was 0 of 12, 0 of 13, the quote that I thought of was the Kobe Bryant one, where you'd rather go 0 of 30 than 0 of 9, because if you go 0 of 9, you psyched yourself out. And the real adjustment that I saw from James, talking about what Houston did defensively, offensively, I'm not sure that the Rockets really changed all that much other than Harden kept shooting. And fortunately, in the fourth quarter, a couple of the threes that he missed earlier for the game, just 2 of 13, happened to go in. And salute to James for the clutch play, for being able to persevere through it. But it wasn't like, at least to me, he did anything radically different. He just kept firing and ultimately sample size won out. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's part of it that he kept attacking with his own shot. I thought he, you know, throughout the fourth quarters, did a great job of getting into the paint. I mean, the 10 assists, a lot of them lobs to Capela. I mean, those were, that to me showed that he was still in attack mode. I think he's gotten passive at times. And there may have been a 3 to 4 minute stretch late in the third that, you know, we were all kind of wondering, okay, what is he trying to do? But other than that, I thought he was attacking all game. I will say, though, that I think the coaching staff made some adjustments in the second half. I thought there was better floor balance. And, you know, they were trying to bring ball screeners early in the game, and that kind of slowed James down because that they didn't do that as much in the first two games. And I thought that they kind of went back to just, you know, letting him attack one-on-one off the dribble, having Capela in that dunker spot. With the right balance, and it just freed everything and kept things going. And so I thought that, you know, everyone made subtle adjustments to just and then kept attacking, and then good things happened in the fourth.
Yeah, I thought the floor balance was different. I was mostly referring to James individually, talking about the lack of adjustments. Yeah, they did go more 2-2 in terms of the floor balance. You had Capela in the dunker slot. That worked a lot better than the first half, which was a little bizarre at times. For James in particular, though, credit to the guy for just playing through it. And the guy who we haven't mentioned yet, Chris Paul, 18 points, 4 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 steals. I could not be more encouraged by what we have seen from him through three games, in large part because he's succeeding without the three-point shot. He shot 3 of 16 from 3 in this series, but that's the one thing that over time should get sorted out. So to me, to see Chris Paul make the type of plays, for example, the one where he just froze the Jazz defense with about 5 minutes left, that put Houston up 91-88. Before that, Utah was on a 5-0 run. They had all the momentum, everything going their way. To see that Chris Paul can still succeed offensively and defensively, even without the three-point shot, to me, it reflects the state that his body is in. And against Golden State, obviously, for Houston to have any chance, you've got to have Chris Paul in playoff CP3, second all-star mode, whatever you want to call it. And so to me, I was really encouraged by what we've seen from Chris, in large part because he's succeeding even without the three-point shot, which inevitably is going to start falling at some point.
And the other piece, too, that he's brought all along and he's continued to bring these playoffs is just the way he manages the tempo I think in years past, if Harden has had a suboptimal game for him, some of these games tend to get out of hand. You know, the team starts chucking threes, and then the home team gets out and runs in transition. And all of a sudden, like a 5-point game turns into 15. And Chris just didn't let that happen. I mean, yes, he picked up some weird foul calls, but as long as he was in there, the game was within reach because he managed it. It was at the right tempo. They're getting shots. He was getting his shots. And then more importantly, the defense was able to get set too because of the pace. And just kind of keep the game within reach. And I thought that was just so huge and something that we missed, you know, obviously last year when he got hurt. But that it's so important what he brings just to the way he manages the entire game. And I thought that was great to see as well.
We're continuing our discussion here with Karthik Prasad, former guest here at Locked On Rockets, part of our regular rotating panel of analysts. You can follow him on Twitter at Stanford KP. Today's show, we're recapping the 104-101 win the Rockets had on Saturday night in Game 3 at Salt Lake City. We spent much of our first segment with Karthik discussing James Harden and Chris Paul. Now, as we close out the podcast, I want to transition to the role players, what we saw there. Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker combined 5 of 14 from 3, not as laser efficient as they were in Games 1 and 2 when they shot 50% or better from behind the arc. But the shots they did make came at big times. Eric Gordon had a big three with about 2.5 left that put the Rockets up 4. Very reminiscent of a couple of shots he hit in the Western Conference Finals. PJ Tucker, 12 points, 10 rebounds, including 2 massive offensive rebounds. Well, 1 offensive, 1 defense in the final 15 seconds. Also made 3 of his 4 foul shots to put the game away. 12 points, 10 rebounds overall. Karthik, this is not a game in which either of those two guys will remember, at least statistically. 12 points, 10 boards for PJ, 12 points for Eric on 4 of 11 shooting. But to me, this showed, and this is a shout out to our friend Pat Starr, winning DNA. Those guys made key plays when it mattered. And even if they didn't have their best stuff, I was largely encouraged that down the stretch, and this was kind of reminiscent of those Western Conference Finals, the ugly games, those two found ways, even though the performance overall was kind of choppy and uneven, to step up when Houston needed it most. Where were you at on those two?
Yeah, I know for sure. I mean, there were timely shots. You know, we saw that both in the first half and then late in the second half, especially with Eric Gordon. But I just thought the defense that they both played was phenomenal. I mean, after Donovan Mitchell started off, you know, very hot in the first half, I thought Eric really put the clamps on, and it was just getting in his airspace and just making sure that, you know, he couldn't get a rhythm. And to me, the defense that those two guys brought, I mean, it's just clarity of roles, clarity of impact that they were able to bring. And it felt seamless. It felt like they knew what they had to do in order to win and that the rest would sort itself out. And so Tucker with the rebounds, Eric, you know, getting in and being close to Donovan, it was great. And the threes, I think, will come, right? I mean, both of them shoot really well at home. But to be able to make timely shots, that's what we needed. I thought that last one that Eric made to put us up 4 was amazing. I mean, he had kind of had a few earlier where he hesitated and missed, but that one, I think he took his time and just knocked it down. And, you know, so I think, you know, yesterday was a pure team win. I mean, James, he had his 6 steals, and these guys were all over the boards and defending. And so I was encouraged in how kind of everyone just stepped up and did what they knew they had to do.
The Rockets on the glass for the game, 52 boards to 48 for Utah. That's their best rebounding differential of the series, plus 4, even though they're much smaller. PJ Tucker had 10, Clint Capella had 14. So in terms of how you overcome a bad night from James Harden, 3 of 20, a night in which the Rockets missed 30 of their 45 threes and had so many things go wrong. The Jazz go to the free throw line 38 times. Well, you make up for it with defense and rebounding, the effort. And really, that's not just one or two players. As you said, that's a team win. That's up and down the roster. The other thing that was really encouraging, the bench combined 29 points on 11 of 20 shooting. Kenneth Faried, Daniel House Jr., and then the two guys who obviously did the lion's share of the scoring, Austin Rivers with 11, Gerald Green with 9. Karthik, what I'm curious your perspective on, we've bounced before on our podcast here at Locked On Rockets about Gerald Green versus Iman Shumpert, and I still don't know who the matchup is for the Warriors, But what's become crystal clear over the last couple of weeks is against elite defenses, the Rockets seem to have a level of trust with Gerald Green and his ability to put the ball in the bucket. The quick nature of his release, that even if a possession is bogged down, he can still find a sliver of daylight. We saw it with the 5 threes he had in Oklahoma City, the regular season finale. We saw it with the three he made last night, including back-to-back in the fourth quarter to give Houston the lead. Talk about what you see Green versus Shumpert and why you think that even though, you know, Green down the stretch of the year, he was in and out of the rotation, he was injured, but now that the schedule has gotten tougher, the finale in OKC, and now this first-round series with Utah, obviously these are top-notch defenses, and that plays a role in maybe needing more balance on the offensive side in terms of your role players. But to me, there just seems to be a degree of trust that Mike D'Antoni, Jeff Bezdelet, that coaching staff has in Gerald Green, and at least on Saturday night, he rewarded them with a couple of huge threes in the fourth quarter.
His ability to impact a game almost regardless of the defense is something that every team needs, right? I mean, he can get his shot off over anyone, and that variance is really important to us, especially when some of these games hang in the balance. And I think defensively, you're right. I mean, he's making fewer mistakes. I would say that they kind of have a trust on what his role needs to be, you know, the rotations that he's primarily responsible for. But I do think, Craig Ackerman had a good quote yet last night that was, the coaches kind of feel him out. And depending on his demeanor, his shot, his energy and his focus out there, they kind of leave him in, extend the leash, and then they kind of know that maybe good things will happen in terms of that variance. I do think, though, that, you know, this series, you really only had to key in on one guy on the perimeter. And so defensively for us, it was easier to kind of for Gerald to get out on the rest of the shooters. It wasn't as complex for him. We're not asking him to chase around, you know, Klay Thompson or Steph Curry or anyone else. So that's where I think, you know, Mike's talked a lot about how he wants to use certain guys in certain ways. And this series has really been about, you know, Gerald helping us break through in some of the key moments. And you know, whether it's matchup based or not going forward, I do think at least it's good to know that they have that trust and that he's really unafraid in terms of getting those shots up and making sure he gives us a chance to win.
Final question. Game four Monday night, what does Houston most need to do to close out this series? Because I look at it, even though it's 3-0, and I'm certainly not expecting the Jazz to become the first team ever to overcome a 3-0 deficit, at the same time, it is very crucial considering that the Warriors likely loom next and just how much the rest before these first three games has seemed to benefit Chris Paul. If you can close it out in five games or less, and hopefully in four, and give the Rockets a full week off or close to it heading into the Golden State series, obviously that's a big deal. And with the Jazz, they don't fit the profile to me of a team, especially not in that environment, that's going to fold up shop. Quinn Snyder, Donovan Mitchell, they're still building, so I don't think because they're down 3-0, you're going to see them too psychologically demoralized. They're going to come out and play. You're going to have to come out and earn it. So to me, Karthik, the biggest adjustment for the Rockets is having a fast start. I thought what really hurt them, and well, not so much an adjustment, the biggest thing they need, the variable, I thought what hurt them on Saturday was that 8-0 kick right out of the gate from the Jazz, in which Donovan Mitchell had that should have been a 4-point play, and it really put the Rockets behind the eight ball early, got the crowd going. To me, where you could start to see a psychological impact if the Rockets play from in front, perhaps that's what they need. X's and O's wise, as we said earlier, I don't think there's that much that's going to transfer from one series to the next, but obviously the Jazz are playing Gobert even further out, trying to take away even the floater game. Just, if you could, be it X's and O's, be it psychological, what is it that you see going into Monday as the biggest key for the Rockets to close out this series?
I think it's coming out with a ton of energy. I mean, they should mentally think that this is a 2-1 series and that they have no room for error, and just come out and control the pace. I think is a big one. You don't want the Jazz to, you know, get out in transition as much, give them any easy baskets. So mentally, I think it's just coming out with the right level of control in the game. They want to land the first punch in terms of getting a good shots, trusting their offense that they had back in game one and two. I think it's just mentally preparing as if this was the closeout game. And the fact is they don't have the luxury of continuing to extend this series. You know, I do think the Jazz will battle. I think Donovan will play well. But, you know, this kind of reminds me of when the Rockets lost Game 5 in San Antonio 2 years ago. Mm. It was just a weird, you know, back-and-forth battle. They ran out of gas at the end. And so, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a hangover effect for the Jazz. Now, I expect them to come out and be ready and give it one last go. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was a hangover effect, because they look spent, both physically and emotionally, at the end of this game. And it's going to be hard, you know, in another 24 hours to turn that and say, hey, let's get back up and do this again. So the Rockets have to take advantage of that. They have to be ready for any, you know, early energy, and then just kind of, you know, keep the same fight they showed last night, which is keep going, play our game, and then just put them away at the end. And so I'm looking forward to it. I think it'd be a big step, and we haven't really seen a sweep in the James Harden era. And so I would love, just from a let's take care of business standpoint, to complete the task and get ready for the Warriors, but it won't be easy. So you just had to come out with the right mindset.
Yep, sounds good. Karthik, thanks so much for the time. Folks, if you want to follow him on Twitter for more engagement before Monday night's Game 4 or during it and after, you can do so at StanfordKP. Karthik, thanks so much for taking a few minutes with us on this Sunday. Enjoy the rest of your Easter, and we'll talk to you later in the playoffs.
Thanks, Ben. You too. Go Rockets Game 4. See ya.
Good stuff there with Karthik Prasad. I thought he summed up pretty well what the priorities are, both in Game 4 and moving on. And with that, we'll put a bow on this Sunday Easter episode of Locked On Rockets, and of course, start to turn our attention towards Monday night's Game 4, after which, of course, we'll have another post-game episode here at Locked On Rockets. Hopefully a series-ending happy recap if the Rockets, as Karthik mentioned, can get their first sweep of the James Harden era and their first best-of-seven sweep since the 1995 NBA Finals against the Orlando Magic. So for today, this is where we break. If you want more coverage in the interim, as mentioned, the best place is on Twitter. Karthik is on there at StanfordKP. I'm on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we also have a Facebook account at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website at LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those are ways that you can interact. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also remember that you can, in addition to listening, subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and get our most recent episode that way as well. Beyond just listening and hopefully subscribing, if you'd be kind enough to leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice, iTunes, Google, whatever it may be, that helps us even more, because in addition to your listening, your subscriber figures, those reviews are how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Once again, the very happy final from Salt Lake City Saturday night. Rockets 104, Jazz 101. The Rockets go up 3-0 in the best of 7 round 1 series, with a potential closeout Game 4 also in Salt Lake City on Monday evening. Until then, and as mentioned, we'll have a post-game recap shortly after, hopefully recapping not just the game, but the series as the Rockets move on to round 2. Whatever happens, though, we'll have an episode right after breaking it all down right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of everything Houston Rockets basketball. For now, enjoy the rest of your Easter. Thanks for listening, and please come back soon.